Tomorrow, two-time Oscar winner Dustin Hoffman joins us for a conversation about his 35-year career in the movies, and he'll take your calls. Join us tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. And here are a couple of the stories we're following today at NPR News. A court-appointed guardian says there is no reasonable medical hope that Terry Schiavo's condition will improve. Schiavo is the severely brain-damaged woman from Florida at the center of a life-or-death legal battle. And the Pentagon says it will allow a U.S. citizen who was captured in Afghanistan in 2001 to have access to a lawyer. Yasser Esam Hamdi has been held at a Navy jail without counsel since his capture. You can hear details on that stories on those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. The Hamdi case is one of a series of developments this week in legal cases arising from the war on terrorism. Zacharias Moussaoui and the Lackawanna Six are all in the news again, as well as are the 660 detainees at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. If you have questions about their cases, where they're going, give us a phone call. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Vivica Novak. She's a Washington correspondent for Time magazine. She's with us on the line from her office here in Washington, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Good to be with you, Neil.
Why don't we start with the Hamdi case, which we mentioned earlier. He was a man born in the United States, captured in Afghanistan in late 2001, working with the Taliban. He's been held for 2 years as an enemy combatant without access to a lawyer. Now the Pentagon's reversed itself and decided that Hamdi can see a lawyer. What brought on the change, do you think?
Well, it's the timing is a little suspicious because it is the government has to file a brief with the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has been asked to take the case in which Hamdi or a lawyer who is trying to represent Hamdi without having had actual access to him thus far is challenging the absolute lack of due process that he's been getting. And a lot of law professors and others have been supporting this challenge because he is a United States citizen. While he was captured on the battlefield overseas, he is, a citizen. He's being held in the U.S., and they see no reason that normal constitutional and due process rights shouldn't apply to him.
Now, if this case, would that make the Supreme Court case moot?
No, not at all, because having granted him access to a lawyer, which the government says they're doing just as a matter of discretion and kind of because they're going to be nice about it, does not mean that they are going to allow him due process and the ability to challenge his detention in the courts, and the other rights that you normally have as a defendant. So, no, much of this case still survives.
There are two other U.S. citizens being held as enemy combatants in the same circumstances as Mr. Hamdi, at least until the Pentagon's decision today. They are the so-called dirty bomber, Jose Padilla, and alleged al-Qaeda sleeper agent Ali Saleh Khala al-Mari. Does the decision to allow Hamdi to see a lawyer establish a precedent for these other two U.S. enemy combatants?
Well, not according to the government. They're saying that this applies to this case only, and, as to the others, nothing has changed so far.
Now, a federal court in Virginia is hearing arguments today in the case of 9/11 suspect Zacharias Moussaoui. The Bush administration is hoping to prevent him from gaining access to al-Qaeda witnesses. What are they worried that Moussaoui will learn from the witnesses?
Well, Moussaoui has been granted access by the lower court judge to three people we captured over there. One of them is Ramzi bin al-Shib, one of them is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and there's a third one. These are top al-Qaeda operatives, and the government says it's worried that it's possible that these three witnesses, when questioned by Moussaoui, could reveal classified information or send some sort of code to other al-Qaeda members around the world. And therefore, national security dictates that Moussaoui should not have access.
They also, as I understand it, the government responded to his circumstances by saying, in a sense, he would be reaping the benefits of the U.S. war on terrorism.
Right. Well, that rings a little hollow, I think, because, frankly, criminal defendants all the time reap the benefits of some happenstance that, turns up a witness. There's no question, if the government is accusing Moussaoui of being an al-Qaeda member, participating in the conspiracy that led to 9/11, and wants to put him to death for this. The problem is, how can you not provide him access to witnesses who know all about 9/11 and might be able to help his defense, in which he says that he was not ever supposed to be part of 9/11?
And that's basically his argument.
Right.
And this has been, this comes after a number of dust-ups, not only between the defense and the judge in the case, Leona Brinkema, when he was acting as his own lawyer, Mr. Moussaoui sent some pretty spectacular requests up to the bench, but also between Judge Brinkema and the government.
That's right. And the judge, I think, is fairly impatient with the government's intransigence on this issue, because it is, a basic right of criminal defendants to be able to question witnesses who might help their defense, who might be exculpatory. And they have repeatedly refused to follow her orders. So she's not very pleased. She's also not very pleased with Moussaoui, because he has been representing himself, and he's been rather outrageous in that representation, and she recently stripped him of the right to represent himself.
Today, up in Buffalo, New York, the sentences are beginning to be handed out for members of the so-called Lackawanna Six. Explain to us a little bit about what's going on there. These men pleaded guilty. They attended a terrorist training camp in Afghanistan. They've admitted that. Yet no one has accused them of plotting to carry out an attack or actually doing anything to threaten the United States government. And some civil liberties advocates are saying that this is amounts basically to a thought crime.
Right. David Cole, who is a noted expert on civil liberties and terrorism at Georgetown, says that essentially that this portion of the law that's being used against them will be struck down eventually. There are challenges to it pending, and it's a material witness statute that was passed after the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, in which says that by providing personnel to the terrorists, you can be found guilty of a crime. And the government's contention is that they were providing themselves by going to these camps, even though they never did anything or planned anything, as far as we know.
So the last word on that one, probably going to be heard in appellate court sometime later.
Well, yes, on the statute, but not on these cases, because when you plead guilty, there is no appeal. If the statute is found to be unconstitutional, then the question will be, can you then free these men? I think these guys really felt like they were not guilty, but I think they felt like they had to plead guilty, because it's hard to make a sympathetic case out of going over there and having an audience with Osama bin Laden and, generally just participating in the whole, movement, even if they didn't actually do anything.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email TOTN at NPR.org. And Mark joins us on the phone from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, my quick question is how they're going to convict Moussaoui when the FBI, about, I believe, 3 weeks ago, released some information saying that they were investigating a completely different person for being the 19th hijacker. Also, Osama bin Laden, in videotapes, has stated that the people who were on the mission, I guess the hijackers, didn't even know that they were going to be the hijackers. Mm-hmm. It would be hard, in my opinion, to convict Moussaoui of actually being a participant if he didn't have any prior knowledge of what was going on.
I think the 20th hijacker is the one we're looking
hijacker.
For. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Vivica Novak?
Yeah, well, the government has had shifting theories in this case as to who Moussaoui was supposed to be. Moussaoui contends that he was an al-Qaeda member. He admits that, but he was supposed to take part in a later mission. So the government has gone from originally saying, he was part of 9/11 to, now sort of shifting that around a bit. And Moussaoui has had fun with that in some of his pleadings. But I guess that the bottom line is that the government feels very strongly that he was involved heavily in al-Qaeda, and I think it would be hard to find a jury, especially in Northern Virginia, that would find him not guilty of some of these things, even if technically you may be right.
We're speaking with Vivica Novak of Time Magazine. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Vivica, in this week's issue of Time, you reported on the U.S. Military Detention Center at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. You said, according to a U.S. military official, that some 140 detainees, about 20% of those currently being held, that 140 are scheduled to be released. Is that still on track? Any word on how quickly they might get out of there?
Well, I think some of them are likely to get out of there this month. Now, things can change. But yes, I had the general who's in charge of the joint task force down there tell me that about 100 were going to be released soon. And then another military source who didn't want to be named, who has seen the files on the detainees, said it was more like 140. But I think that they very much have an eye on the Supreme Court case that is going to be heard in March or April, that essentially raises the issue of whether these detainees have the right to challenge their detention in court, which in normal criminal court would be called a habeas corpus proceeding. The government is maintaining that, you know, they can have no lawyers, they have none of these rights. But the Supreme Court has taken the case, and I think we'll take a very hard look at it, and it seems to have lit a fire under the Pentagon when it comes to processing the detainees' cases.
All of those people are from different countries, I think a total of 44 different countries, but they include important American allies like Australia and Britain, where the detention without recourse to a lawyer or a court or any charges being filed has become a major issue. And those cases are being pressed particularly hard, are they not?
Well, there are six detainees who have been designated eligible for military tribunals. These would be the first military tribunals under the order that the president signed in 2001. And none of them have actually been charged yet, because in part we have been negotiating with Britain and Australia. Britain has two of these six detainees, and Australia has one. And they all want the terms of the tribunals to be changed or their people sent back home. And so it's been very complicated, and the U.S. realizes that we can't have different standards of justice for people from different countries. So I think they're doing a review right now of the rules governing military tribunals.
And one other issue that's come up in recent days, the Department of Homeland Security has decided to end a registration program that required men and boys from countries linked to terrorism to provide personal information to the government. Why did they decide to end this program?
Well, I think it's because it wasn't very effective. They made a statement that said something like that at the time earlier this week when they announced it. And indeed, it's forced, you know, tens of thousands of men and boys over the age of 16 from mostly Muslim countries to go in and register. And I think it's some 10,000 of them have been found to be out of compliance with the terms of their visas, and so have been put in deportation proceedings. But not a one of these tens of thousands has been found to have a link to terrorism.
So causing a lot of problems, obviously, in the in various communities in this country, from the countries that they came from. Is another kind of registration program going to replace the one that they've just decided to end, though?
Well, we're going to have an entry and exit system that will really apply to pretty much everyone, the U.S. visit program, which goes into effect very soon, and will require fingerprinting of people who come into this country.
Thanks very much for being with us today.
It's good to be with you, Neil.
Vivica Novak is a Washington correspondent for Time magazine, and she spoke with us from her office here in Washington. Don't forget to join us tomorrow on Talk of the Nation when the actor Dustin Hoffman will be here to talk about a new project he's involved with, the 50 greatest moments in the history of movies. It includes a couple of his films and two, The Graduate, and I think Midnight Cowboy might be in there. If you'd like to join our conversation with Dustin Hoffman tomorrow, join us tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.